Wife, Lord Toranaga could never have got the Anjin San's knowledge.
He smiled crookedly. I hear you stuck pistols in Omi-san's face.
I was only doing my duty, sir.
Where did you learn to use guns?
I had never handled a gun until then. I didn't know if the pistols were loaded. But I would have pulled the triggers.
Buntaro laughed.
Omi-san thought that too.
She refilled his cup.
I never understood why Omi-san didn't try to take them away from me. His lord had ordered him to take them, but he didn't.
I would have.
Yes, uncle, I know. Please excuse me. I would still have pulled the triggers.
Yes, but you would have missed.
Yes, probably. Since then, I've learned how to shoot.
He taught you?
No, one of Lord Naga's officers.
Why?
My father would never allow his daughters to learn sword or spear. He thought, wisely, I believe, we should devote our time to learning gentler things. But sometimes a woman needs to protect her master and his house. The pistol's a good weapon for a woman. Very good. It requires no strength and little practice. So now I can perhaps be a little more use to my master. For I will surely blow any man's head off to protect him. And for the honour of our house.
Buntaro drained his cup.
I was proud when I heard you'd opposed Omi-san as you did. You were correct. Lord Hiromatsu will be proud, too.
Thank you, uncle. But I was only doing an ordinary duty.
She bowed formally.
My master asks if you would allow him the honour of talking with you now, if it pleases you.
He continued the ritual.
Please thank him, but first, may I bathe? If it pleases him, I'll see him when my wife returns.
Chapter 35 Blackthorn waited in the garden. Now he wore the brown uniform kimono that Toranaga had given him, with swords in his sash and a loaded pistol hidden under the sash. From Hujiko's hurried explanations, and subsequently from the servants, he had gathered that he had to receive Buntaro formally, because the samurai was an important general and Hatamoto, and was the first guest in the house. So he had bathed and changed quickly, and had gone to the place that had been prepared. He had seen Buntaro briefly yesterday, when he arrived. Buntaro had been busy with Taranaga and Yabu the rest of the day, together with Mariko, and Blackthorn had been left alone to organize the hurried attack demonstration with Omi and Naga. The attack was satisfactory. Mariko had returned to the house very late. She had told him briefly about Buntaro's escape, the days of being hunted by Ishido's men, eluding them, and at last breaking through the hostile provinces to reach the Kanto.
It was very difficult, but perhaps not too difficult, Anjin-san. My husband is very strong and very brave.
What's going to happen now? Are you leaving?
Lord Toranaga orders that everything's to remain as it was. Nothing's to be changed.
You're changed, Mariko. A spark's gone out of you.
No, that's your imagination, Anjin-san. It's just my relief that he's alive when I was certain he was dead.
Yes, but it's made a difference, hasn't it?
Of course. I thank God my master wasn't captured, that he lived to obey Lord Toranaga. Will you excuse me, Anjin-san? I'm tired now. I'm sorry. I'm very, very tired.
Is there anything I can do?
What should you do, Anjin-san, except to be happy for me and for him? Nothing's changed, really. Nothing is finished because nothing began. Everything's as it was. My husband's alive.
Don't you wish he were dead?
Blackthorn asked himself in the garden.
No. Then why the hidden pistol? Are you filled with guilt?
No.
Nothing began. Didn't it?
No.
You thought you were taking her. Isn't that the same as taking her in fact?
He saw Mariko walk into the garden from the house. She looked like a porcelain miniature following half a pace behind Buntaro, his burliness seeming even greater by comparison. Ujiko was with her, and the maids. He bowed.
Yokoso oide kudasareta, Buntaro-san.
Welcome to my house, Buntaro-san. They all bowed. Buntaro and Mariko sat on the cushions opposite him. Ujiko seated herself behind him. Nigatsu and the maid Koi began to serve cha and sake. Buntaro took sake. So did Blackthorn.
Domo, Anjin-san. Ikaga desu ka?
Ii. Ikaga desu ka?
Ii. Kowa jozuni shabareru yoni natana.
Good. You're beginning to speak Japanese very well. Soon Blackthorn became lost in the conversation, for Buntaro was slurring his words, speaking carelessly and rapidly.
Sorry, Mariko-san. I didn't understand that.
My husband wishes to thank you for trying to save him. With the oar. You remember? When we were escaping from Osaka.
Ah, so des. Domo. Please tell him I still think we should have put back to shore. There was time enough. The maid drowned unnecessarily.
He says that was karma.
That was a wasted death,
Blackthorn replied, and regretted the rudeness. He noticed that she did not translate it.
My husband says that the assault strategy is very good indeed.
Domo, tell him I'm glad he escaped unharmed, and that he's to command the regiment, and of course that he's welcome to stay here.
Domo, Anjin-san, Buntaro-sama says, yes, the assault plan is very good, but for himself, he will always carry his bow and swords. He can kill at a much greater range, with great accuracy, and faster than a musket.
Tomorrow I will shoot against him, and we will see, if he likes.
You will lose, Anjin-san. So sorry. May I caution you not to attempt that? She said.
Blackthorn saw Buntaro's eyes flick from Mariko to him, and back again.
Thank you, Mariko-san. Say to him that I would like to see him shoot.
He asks, can you use a bow?
Yes, but not as a proper bowman. Bows are pretty much out of date with us, except the crossbow. I was trained for the sea. There we use only cannon, musket, or cutlass. Sometimes we use fire arrows, but only for enemy sails in close quarters.
He asks, how are they used? How do you make them, these fire arrows? Are they different from ours, like the ones used against the galley at Osaka?
Blackthorn began to explain, and there were the usual tiring interruptions and probing re-questionings. By now, he was used to their incredibly inquisitive minds about any aspect of war, but found it exhausting to talk through an interpreter. Even though Mariko was excellent, what she actually said was rarely exact. A long reply would always be shortened. Some of what was spoken would, of course, be changed slightly, and misunderstandings occurred. So explanations had to be repeated unnecessarily. But without Mariko, he knew that he could never have become so valuable.
It's only knowledge that keeps me from the pit, he reminded himself. But that's no problem, because there's much to tell yet, and a battle to win. A real battle to win. You're safe till then. You've a navy to plan. And then home. Safe!
He saw Buntaro's swords and the guard's swords, and he felt his own and the oiled warmth of his pistol. And he knew, truthfully, he would never be safe in this land. Neither he nor anyone was safe. Not even Toranaga.
Anjin-san, Buntaro-sama asks if he sends you men tomorrow. Could you show them how to make these arrows?
Where can we get pitch?
I don't know.
Mariko cross-questioned him on where it was usually found, and what it looked like or smelled like, and on possible alternatives. Then she spoke to Buntaro at length. Ujiko had been silent all the while, her eyes and ears trained, missing nothing. The maids, well commanded by a slight motion of Hujiko's fan to an empty cup, constantly replenished the sake flasks.
My husband says he will discuss this with Lord Toranaga. Perhaps pitch exists somewhere in the Kanto. We've never heard of it before. If not pitch, we have thick oils, whale oils, which might substitute. He asks, do you sometimes use war rockets, Like the Chinese?
Yes, but they're not considered of much value, except in siege. The Turks used them when they came against the Knights of St. John in Malta. Rockets are used mostly to cause fire and panic.
He asks, please give him details about this battle.
It was 40 years ago, in the greatest...
Blackthorn stopped, his mind racing. This had been the most vital siege in Europe. 60,000 Islamic Turks, the cream of the Ottoman Empire, had come against 600 Christian knights, supported by a few thousand Maltese auxiliaries, at bay in their vast castle complex at St. Elmo, on the tiny island of Malta in the Mediterranean. The knights had successfully withstood the six-month siege, and incredibly, had forced the enemy to retreat in shame. This victory had saved the whole Mediterranean seaboard, and thus Christendom, from being ravaged at whim by the infidel hordes. Blackthorn had suddenly realized that this battle gave him one of the keys to Osaka Castle. How to invest it, how to harry it, how to break through the gates, and how to conquer it.
You were saying, Signor?
It was 40 years ago, in the greatest inland sea we have in Europe, Mariko-san. The Mediterranean. It was just a siege, like any siege, not worth talking about.
He lied. Such knowledge was priceless. Certainly not to be given away lightly, and absolutely not now.
Mariko had explained many times that Osaka Castle stood inexorably between Toranaga and victory.
Blackthorn was certain that the solution to Osaka might well be his passport out of the empire, with all the riches he would need in this life. He noticed that Mariko seemed troubled.
Signora?
Nothing, signor.
She began to translate what he had said. But he knew that she knew he was hiding something. The smell of the stew distracted him.
Bujigo-san!
Hi, Anjin-san.
Shokuji wa madaka? Kyaku wa sazukufku de oro, ne?
When's dinner? The guests may be hungry.
Ah, komen nasai. Haga kureti kare ni itashimasu.
Blackthorn saw her point at the sun and realized that she had said, after sunset. He nodded and grunted, which passed in Japan for a polite, thank you, I understand. Mariko turned again to Blackthorn.
My husband would like you to tell him about a battle you've been in.
They're all in the war manual, Mariko-san.
He says he's read it with great interest, but it contains only brief details. Over the next days, he wishes to learn everything about all your battles. One now, if it pleases you.
They're all in the war manual. Perhaps tomorrow, Mariko-san.
He wanted time to examine his blinding new thought about Osaka Castle and that battle. And he was tired of talking, tired of being cross-questioned, but most of all, he wanted to eat.
Please, Anjin-san, would you tell it again, just once, for my husband?
He heard the careful pleading under her voice, so he relented.
Of course. Which do you think he'd like?
The one in the Netherlands? Near Zeeland? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, he said.
So he began to tell the story of this battle, which was like almost every other battle in which men died, most of the time because of the mistakes and stupidity of the officers in command.
My husband says it's not so here, Anjin-san. Here the commanding officers have to be very good, or they die very quickly.
Of course, my criticisms applied to European leaders only.
Buntaro-sama says he will tell you about our wars and our leaders, particularly the Lord Taiko, over the days. A fair exchange for your information, she said noncommittally.
Domo.
Blackthorn bowed slightly, feeling Buntaro's eyes grind into him.
What do you really want from me, you son of a bitch?
Dinner was a disaster for everyone. Even before they had left the garden to go to the veranda to eat, the day had become ill-omened.
Excuse me, Anjin-san, but what's that?
Mariko pointed.
Over there. My husband asks, what's that?
Where? Oh, there. That's a pheasant, Blackthorn said. Lord Toranaga sent it to me, along with a hare. We're having that for dinner, English style. At least I am, though there'd be enough for everyone.
Thank you, but we, my husband and I, we don't eat meat. But why is the pheasant hanging there? In this heat, shouldn't it be put away and prepared?
That's the way you prepare pheasant. You hang it to mature the meat.
What? Just like that? Excuse me, Anjintan, she said, flustered. So sorry, but it'll go rotten quickly. It still has its feathers, and it's not been cleaned.
Pheasant meat's dry, Mariko-san, so you hang it for a few days, perhaps a couple of weeks, depending on the weather. Then you pluck it, clean it, and cook it.
You leave it in the air? To rot? Just like...
Nanja? Buntaro asked impatiently. She spoke to him apologetically, and he sucked in his breath, then got up and peered at it and prodded it. A few flies buzzed, then settled back again. Hesitantly, Hujiko spoke to Buntaro, and he flushed.
Your consort said you ordered that no one was to touch it but you?
Mariko asked. Yes. Don't you hang game here? Not everyone's Buddhist.
No, Anjin-san, I don't think so.
Some people believe you should hang a pheasant by the tail feathers until it drops off. But that's an old wives' tale, Blackthorn said. By the necks the right way, then the juices stay where they belong. Some people let it hang until it drops off the neck, but personally, I don't like meat that gamey. We used to. He stopped, for she had gone a slight shade of green.
Nandesuka, Mariko-san?
Hujiko asked quickly. Mariko explained. They all laughed nervously, and Mariko got up, weakly patting the sheen off her forehead.
I'm sorry, Anjin-san. Would you excuse me a moment?
Your food's just as strange, he wanted to say. What about yesterday, the raw squid? White, slimy, almost tasteless, chewy meat, with nothing but soya sauce to wash it down. Or the chopped octopus tentacles, again raw, with cold rice and seaweed. How about fresh jellyfish with yellow-brown souped tofu, fermented bean curds, that look like a bowl of dog puke? Oh, yes, served beautifully in a fragile, attractive bowl, but still looking like puke. Yes, by God, enough to make any man sick. Eventually, they went to the veranda room, and after the usual interminable bowings and small talk and cha and sake, the food began to arrive. Small trays of clear fish soup and rice and raw fish, as always. And then his stew. He lifted the lid of the pot. The steam rose and golden globules of fat danced on the shimmering surface. The rich, mouth-watering gravy soup was heavy with meat juices and tender chunks of flesh. Proudly he offered it, but they all shook their heads and begged him to eat. Domo, he said. It was good manners to drink soup directly from the small lacquered bowls, and to eat anything solid in the soup with chopsticks. A ladle was on the tray. Hard put to stop his hunger, he filled the bowl and began to eat. Then he saw their eyes. They were watching with nauseated fascination, which they unsuccessfully tried to hide. His appetite began to slip away. He tried to dismiss them, but could not, his stomach growling. Hiding his irritation, he put down the bowl and replaced the lid, and told them gruffly it was not to his taste. He ordered Negatsu to take it away.
Should it be thrown away, then? Hujiko asked.
Mariko said hopefully. Yes. Hujiko and Buntaro relaxed.
Would you like more rice? Hujiko asked.
No, thank you. Mariko waved her fan, smiled encouragingly, and refilled his sake cup. But Blackthorn was not soothed, and he resolved in the future to cook in the hills in private, to eat in private, and to hunt openly. To hell with them, he thought. If Toranaga can hunt, so can I. When am I going to see him? How long do I have to wait? The pox on waiting and the pox on Toranaga, he said aloud in English, and felt better.
What, Anjin-san?
Mariko asked in Portuguese. Nothing, he replied. I was just wondering when I'd see Lord Toranaga.
He didn't tell me. Very soon, I imagine.
Buntaro was slurping his sake and soup loudly, as was custom. This began to annoy Blackthorn. Mariko talked cheerfully with her husband, who grunted, hardly acknowledging her. She was not eating, and it further irked him that both she and Hujiko were almost fawning on Buntaro, and also that he himself had to put up with this unwanted guest.
"Tell Buntaro-sama that in my country a host toasts the honored guest."
He lifted his cup with a grim smile.
"Long life and happiness."
He drank. Buntaro listened to Mariko's explanation. He nodded in agreement, lifted his cup in return, smiled through his teeth, and drained it.
"Health!"
Blackthorn toasted again. And again. And again.
"Health!"
This time Buntaro did not drink. He put down the full cup and looked at Blackthorn out of his small eyes. Then Buntaro called to someone outside. The shoji slid open at once. His guard, ever present, bowed and handed him the immense bow and quiver. Buntaro took it and spoke vehemently and rapidly to Blackthorn.
My husband says you wanted to see him shoot, Anjin-san. He thinks tomorrow is too far away. Now is a good time. The gateway of your house, Anjin-san. He asks, which post do you choose?
I don't understand, Blackthorn said.
The main gate would be 40 paces away, somewhere across the garden, but now completely masked by the closed shoji wall to his right.
The left or the right post? Please choose.
Her manner was urgent. Warned, he looked at Buntaro. The man seemed detached, oblivious of them, a squat, ugly troll who sat gazing into the distance.
Left, he said, fascinated.
Hidari,
she said. At once, Buntaro slid an arrow from the quiver, and still sitting, set up the bow, raised it, drew back the bowstring to eye level, and released the shaft with savage, almost poetic liquidity. The arrow slashed toward Mariko's face, touched a strand of her hair in passing, and disappeared through the shoji paper wall. Another arrow was launched almost before the first had vanished, and then another, each one coming within an inch of impaling Mariko. She remained calm and motionless, kneeling as she had always been. A fourth arrow, and then a last. The silence was filled with the echo of the twanging bowstring. Buntaro sighed and came back slowly. He put the bow across his knees. Mariko and Hujiko sucked in their breaths and smiled and bowed and complimented Buntaro, and he nodded and bowed slightly. They looked at Blackthorn. He knew that what he had witnessed was almost magical. All the arrows had gone through the same hole in the shoji. Buntaro handed the bow back to his guard and picked up his tiny cup. He stared at it a moment, then raised it to Blackthorn, drained it, and spoke harshly, his brutish self again.
"He, my husband asks, politely, please go and look."
Blackthorn thought a moment, trying to still his heart.
"There's no need. Of course he hit the target."
"He says he would like you to be sure."
"I'm sure."
"Please, Anjin-san. You would honor him."
"I don't need to honor him."
"Yes, but may I please quietly add my request?"
Again the plea was in her eyes.
"How do I say that was marvelous to watch?"
She told him. He said the words and bowed. Buntaro bowed perfunctorily in return.
"Ask him, please, to come with me to see the arrows."
"He says that he would like you to go by yourself. He does not wish to go, Anjin-san."
"Why?"
"If he has been accurate, senor, you should see that by yourself. If not, you should see that alone, too. Then neither you nor he can be embarrassed."
"And if he's missed?"
"He hasn't. But by our custom, accuracy under such impossible circumstances is unimportant compared to the grace that the archer shows, the nobility of movement, his strength to shoot sitting, or the detachment about the winning or losing."
The arrows were within an inch of each other in the middle of the left post. Blackthorn looked back at the house, and he could see 40-odd paces away the small, neat hole in the paper wall that was a spark of light in the darkness.
It's almost impossible to be so accurate, he thought. From where Buntaro was sitting, he couldn't see the garden or the gate, and it was black night outside.
Blackthorn turned back to the post and raised the lantern higher. With one hand, he tried to pull out an arrow. The steel head was buried too deep. He could have snapped the wooden shaft, but he did not wish to. The guard was watching. Blackthorn hesitated. The guard came forward to help, but he shook his head.
Ie, domo,
and went back inside.
Mariko-san, please tell my consort that I would like the arrows left in the post forever. All of them, to remind me of a master archer. I've never seen such shooting.
He bowed to Buntaro.
Thank you, Anjin-san.
She translated, and Buntaro bowed and thanked him for the compliment.
Sake!
Blackthorn ordered. They drank more, much more. Buntaro quaffed his carelessly now, the wine taking him. Blackthorn watched him covertly, then let his attention wander away, as he wondered how the man had managed to line up and fire the arrows with such incredible accuracy.
It's impossible, he thought. Yet I saw him do it. Wonder what Fink and Bacchus and the rest are doing right now.
Toranaga had told him the crew were now settled in Edo, near Erasmus.
Christ Jesus, I'd like to see them and get back aboard.
He glanced across at Mariko, who was saying something to her husband. Buntaro listened. Then, to Blackthorn's surprise, he saw the samurai's face become contorted with loathing. Before he could avert his eyes, Buntaro had looked at him.
Nandeska?
Buntaro's words sounded almost like an accusation.
Nanimo, Buntaro-san.
Nothing. Blackthorn offered everyone sake, hoping to cover his lapse. Again, the women accepted, but just sipped their wine sparingly. Buntaro finished his cup at once, his mood ugly. Then he harangued Mariko lengthily. In spite of himself, Blackthorn spoke out.
What's the matter with him? What's he saying?
Oh, I'm sorry, Anjin-san. My husband was asking about you, about your wife and consorts, and about your children, and about what happened since we left Osaka.
She stopped, changing her mind, and added in a different voice.
He's most interested in you and your views.
I'm interested in him and his views, Mariko-san. How did you meet, you and he? When were you married?
Buntaro overrode him with a flurry of impatient Japanese. At once, Mariko translated what had been said. Buntaro reached over and sloshed two teacups full of sake, offered one to Blackthorn, and waved at the women to take the others.
He, my husband, says sometimes sake cups are too small.
Mariko poured the other teacups full. She sipped one, Ujiko the other. There was another, more bellicose harangue, and Mariko's smile froze on her face. Ujiko's also.
Iye, dozo, komen nasai, Buntaro-sama,
Mariko began.
Ima,
Buntaro ordered. Nervously, Ujiko started to talk, but Buntaro shut her up with one look.
Komen nasai,
Ujiko whispered in apology.
Dozo komen nasai.
What did he say, Mariko-san?
She appeared not to hear Blackthorn.
Dozo gomen nasai, Buntaro-sama, watashi.
Her husband's face reddened.
Ima!
So sorry, Anjin-san, but my husband orders me to answer your questions, to tell you about myself. I told him that I did not think that family matters should be discussed so late at night, but he orders it. Please be patient.
She took a large sip of the sake, then another. The strands of hair that were loose over her ears waved in the slight current made by Hujiko's fan. She drained the cup and put it down.
My maiden name is Akechi. I am the daughter of General Lord Akechi Jinsai, the assassin. My father treacherously assassinated his liege lord, the dictator, Lord Goroda.
God in heaven! Why'd he do that?
Whatever the reason, Anjin-san, it is insufficient. My father committed the worst crime in our world. My blood's tainted, as is the blood of my son.
Then why? He stopped.
Yes, Anjin-san?
I was only going to say that I understand what that means, to kill a liege lord. I'm surprised that you were left alive.
My husband honored me.
Again, Buntaro viciously interrupted her, and she apologized and explained what Blackthorn had asked. Contemptuously, Buntaro waved her on.
My husband honored me by sending me away, she continued in the same gentle way. I begged to be allowed to commit seppuku, but he denied me that privilege. It was... I must explain, seppuku is his privilege to give, or Lord Torunaga's. I still humbly ask it once a year, on the anniversary of the day of the treachery. But, in his wisdom, my husband has always refused me.
Her smile was lovely.
My husband honors me every day, every moment, Anjin-san. If I were he, I would not be able to even talk to such a befouled person.
That's why you're the last of your line?
He asked, remembering what she had said about a catastrophe on the march from Osaka Castle. Mariko translated the question for Buntaro, and then turned back again.
Hi, Anjin-san. But it wasn't a catastrophe. Not for them. They were caught in the hills, my father and his family, by Nakamura, the general who became the Taiko. It was Nakamura who led the armies of vengeance and slaughtered all my father's forces. 20,000 men. Every one. My father and his family were trapped, but my father had time to help them all. My four brothers and three sisters. My mother... and his two consorts. Then he committed seppuku. In that, he was samurai, and they were samurai, she said. They knelt bravely before him, one by one, and he slew them, one by one. They died honorably, and he died honorably. My father's two brothers and one uncle had sided with him in his treachery against their liege lord. They were also trapped, and they died with equal honor. Not one Akechi was left alive to face the hate and derision of the enemy, except me. No, please forgive me, Anjin-san. I'm wrong. My father and his brothers and uncle, they were the real enemy. Of the enemy, only I am left alive, a living witness to filthy treachery. I, Akechi Mariko, was left alive because I was married and so belonged to my husband's family. We lived at Kyoto then. I was at Kyoto when my father died. His treachery and rebellion lasted only 13 days, Anjin-san. But as long as men live in these islands, the name Akechi will be foul.
How long had you been married when that happened?
2 months and 3 days, Anjin-san.
And you were 15 then?
Yes. My husband honored me by not divorcing me or casting me out, as he should have done. I was sent away, to a village in the north. It was colder, Anjin-san, in Shonai province. So cold.
How long were you there?
8 years. The Lord Goroda was 49 when he committed seppuku to prevent capture. That was almost 16 years ago, Anjin-san, and most of his descent...
Buntaro interrupted again, his tongue a whip.
Please excuse me, Anjin-san, Mariko said. My husband correctly points out it should have been enough for me to say that I am the daughter of a traitor, that long explanations are unnecessary. Of course, some explanations are necessary, she added carefully. Please excuse my husband's bad manners, and I beg you to remember what I said about ears to hear with and the eightfold fence. Forgive me, Anjin-san. I am ordered away. You may not leave until he leaves or passes out with drink. Do not interfere.
She bowed to Hujiko.
Dozo gomen nasai. Do itashimashite.
Mariko bowed her head to Buntaro and left. Her perfume lingered.
Sake!
Buntaro said and smiled evilly. Hujiko filled the teacup.
Health! Blackthorn said, in turmoil.
For more than an hour he toasted Buntaro until he felt his own head swimming. Then Buntaro passed out and lay in the shattered mess of the teacups. The shoji opened instantly. The guard came in with Mariko. They lifted Buntaro, helped by servants who seemed to appear out of nowhere, and carried him to the room opposite. Mariko's room. Assisted by the maid, Koi, she began to undress him. The guard slid the shoji closed and sat outside it, his hand on the haft of his loosened sword. Fujiko waited, watching Blackthorn. Maids came and tidied up the disorder. Wearily, Blackthorn ran his hands through his long hair and retied the ribbon of his queue. Then he lurched up and went out onto the veranda, his consort following. The air smelled good and cleansed him, but not enough. He sat ponderously on the stoop and drank in the night. Fujiko knelt behind him and leaned forward.
"Come in, Nasai, Anjin-san,"
she whispered, nodding back at the house.
"Wakarimasu ka?"
"Do you understand?"
"Wakarimasu. Shigata ga nai."
Then, seeing her untoward fear, he stroked her hair.
"Arigato. Arigato, Anjin-sama."
"Anata wa suimin ima, Fujiko-san,"
he said, finding the words with difficulty. "You sleep now."
"Dozo komen nasai, Anjin-sama, suimin, ne?"
she said, motioning him toward his own room, her eyes pleading.
"Iye, watashi oyogu ima."
"No. I'm going for a swim."
"Hai, Anjin-sama."
Obediently she turned and called out. Two of the servants came running. Both were young men from the village, strong and known to be good swimmers. Blackthorn did not object. Tonight he knew his objections would be meaningless.
"Well, anyway," he said aloud as he lurched down the hill, the men following, his brain dulled with drink. "Anyway, I've put him to sleep. He can't hurt her now."
Blackthorn swam for an hour and felt better. When he came back, Fujiko was waiting on the veranda with a pot of fresh char. He accepted some, then went to bed and was instantly asleep. The sound of Buntaro's voice, teeming with malice, awoke him. His right hand was already grasping the hilt of the loaded pistol he always kept under the futon, and his heart was thundering in his chest from the suddenness of his waking. Buntaro's voice stopped. Mariko began to talk. Blackthorn could only catch a few words, but he could feel the reasonableness and the pleading, not abject or whining or even near tears, just her usual firm serenity. Again, Buntaro erupted. Blackthorn tried not to listen.
"Don't interfere," she had told him,
and she was wise. He had no rights, but Buntaro had many.
"I beg you to be careful, Anjin-san. Remember what I told you about ears to hear with and the eightfold fence."
Obediently, he lay back, his skin chilled with sweat, and forced himself to think about what she had said.
"You see, Anjin-san,"
she had told him that very special evening when they were finishing the last of many last flasks of sake, and he had been joking about the lack of privacy everywhere. People always around and paper walls, ears and eyes always prying.
"Here you have to learn to create your own privacy. We're taught from childhood to disappear within ourselves, to grow impenetrable walls behind which we live. If we couldn't, we'd all suddenly go mad and kill each other and ourselves."
"What walls?"
"Oh, we've a limitless maze to hide in, Anjin-san. Rituals and customs, taboos of all kinds. Oh, yes. Even our language has nuances you don't have, which allow us to avoid, politely, any question if we don't want to answer it."
"But how do you close your ears, Mariko-san? That's impossible."
"Oh, very easy. With training. Of course, training begins as soon as a child can talk, so very soon it's second nature to us. How else could we survive? First you begin by cleansing your mind of people, to put yourself on a different plane. Sunset watching is a great help, or listening to the rain. Anjin-san, have you noticed the different sounds of rain? If you really listen, then the present vanishes, nay? Listening to blossoms falling and to rocks growing are exceptionally good exercises. Of course, you're not supposed to see the things. They're only signs, messages to your hara, your center, to remind you of the transience of life, to help you gain wa, harmony. Anjin-san, perfect harmony, which is the most sought-after quality in all Japanese life, all art, all...
She had laughed.
You see what so much sake does to me?
The tip of her tongue touched her lips so enticingly.
I will whisper a secret to you. Don't be fooled by our smiles and gentleness, our ceremonial and our bowing and sweetnesses and attentions. Beneath them all, we can be a million li away, safe and alone. For that's what we seek, oblivion. One of our first poems ever written, it's in the Kojiki, our first history book that was written down about 1,000 years ago. Perhaps that will explain what I'm saying. 8 cumulus arise, for the lovers to hide within. The eightfold fence of Izumo province, enclose those eightfold clouds. Oh, how marvellous, that eightfold fence. We would certainly go mad if we didn't have an eightfold fence. Oh, very yes.
Remember the eightfold fence, he told himself, as the hissing fury of Buntaro continued. I don't know anything about her, or him, really. Think about the musket regiment, or home, or Felicity, or how to get the ship, or about Bacchus, or Torunaga, or Omi-san. What about Omi? Do I need revenge? He wants to be my friend, and he's been good and kind since the pistols and...
The sound of the blow tore into his head. Then Mariko's voice began again, and there was a second blow, and Blackthorn was on his feet in an instant, the shoji open. The guard stood facing him balefully in the corridor outside Mariko's door, sword ready. Blackthorn was preparing to launch himself at the samurai when the door at the far end of the corridor opened. Fujiko, her hair loose and flowing over the sleeping kimono, approached, the sound of ripping cloth and another cloud seemingly not touching her at all. She bowed politely to the guard and stood between them, then bowed meekly to Blackthorn and took his arm, motioning him back into the room. He saw the taut readiness of the samurai. He had only one pistol and one bullet at the moment, so he retreated. Fujiko followed and shut the shoji behind her. Then, very afraid, she shook her head warningly and touched a finger to her lips and shook her head again, her eyes pleading with him.
Kome nasai, wakarimasu ka?
She breathed. But he was concentrating on the wall of the adjoining room that he could smash in so easily. She looked at the wall also, then put herself between him and the wall, and sat, motioning him to do the same. But he could not. He stood readying himself for the charge that would destroy them all, goaded by a whimper that followed another blow.
Iye!
Fujiko shook in terror. He waved her out of the way.
Iye! Iye!
She begged again.
Ima!
At once, Fujiko got up and motioned him to wait as she rushed noiselessly for the swords that lay in front of the tokonama, the little alcove of honor. She picked up the long sword, her hands shaking, drew it out of the scabbard, and prepared to follow him through the wall. At that instant, there was a final blow and a rising torrent of rage. The other shoji slammed open, and unseen, Buntaro stamped away, followed by the guard. There was silence in the house for a moment, then the sound of the garden gate crashing closed. Blackthorn went for his door. Fujiko darted in the way, but he shoved her aside and pulled it open. Mariko was still on her knees in one corner of the next room, a livid welt on her cheek, her hair dishevelled, her kimono in tatters, bad bruises on her thighs and lower back. He rushed over to pick her up, but she cried out,
"Go away, please go away, Anjin-san!"
He saw the trickle of blood from the corner of her mouth.
Jesus, how bad are you?
I told you not to interfere. Please go away,
she said in the same calm voice that belied the violence in her eyes. Then she saw Fujiko, who had stayed at the doorway. She spoke to her. Fujiko obediently took Blackthorn's arm to lead him away, but he tore out of her grasp.
Don't! Iye!
Mariko said,
Your presence here takes away my face and gives me no peace or comfort and shames me. Go away.
I want to help. Don't you understand?
Don't you understand? You have no rights in this.
This is a private quarrel between husband and wife.
That's no excuse for hitting.
Why don't you listen, Anjin-san? He can beat me to death if he wishes. He has the right, and I wish he would. Even that. Then I wouldn't have to endure the shame. You think it's easy to live with my shame? Didn't you hear what I told you? I'm Akechi Jinsai's daughter.
That's not your fault. You did nothing.
It is my fault, and I am my father's daughter.
Mariko would have stopped there. But looking up and seeing his compassion, his concern, and his love, and knowing how he so honored truth, she allowed some of her veils to fall.
Tonight was my fault, Anjin-san, she said. If I would weep as he wants, beg forgiveness as he wants, cringe and be petrified and fawn as he wants, open my legs in pretended terror as he desires, do all these womanly things that my duty demands, then he'd be like a child in my hand. But I will not.
Why?
Because that's my revenge. To repay him for leaving me alive after the treachery. To repay him for sending me away for 8 years and leaving me alive all that time. And to repay him for ordering me back into life and leaving me alive.
She sat back painfully and arranged her tattered kimono closer around her.
I'll never give myself to him again. Once I did, freely, even though I detested him from the first moment I saw him.
Then why did you marry him? You've said women here have rights of refusal, that they don't have to marry against their wishes.
I married him to please Lord Goroda and to please my father. I was so young, I didn't know about Goroda then. But if you want the truth, Goroda was the cruelest, most loathsome man that was ever born. He drove my father to treachery. That's the real truth. Goroda.
She spat the name.
But for him, we'd all be alive and honored. I pray God that Goroda's committed to hell for all eternity.
She moved carefully, trying to ease the agony in her side.
There's only hatred between my husband and me. That's our karma. It would be so easy for him to allow me to climb into the small place of death.
Why doesn't he let you go? Divorce you? Even grant you what you want?
Because he's a man.
A ripple of pain went through her, and she grimaced. Blackthorn was on his knees beside her, cradling her. She pushed him away, fought for control. Hujiko, at the doorway, watched stoically.
I'm all right, Anjin-san. Please leave me alone. You mustn't. You must be careful.
I'm not afraid of him.
Wearily, she pushed the hair out of her eyes and stared up searchingly.
Why not let the Anjin-san go to meet his karma?
Mariko asked herself.
He's not of our world. Buntaro will kill him so easily. Only Toranaga's personal protection has shielded him so far. Yabu, Omi, Naga, Buntaro. Any one of them could be provoked so easily into killing him. He's caused nothing but trouble since he arrived, ne? So has his knowledge. Naga's right. The Anjin-san can destroy our world unless he's bottled up. What if Buntaro knew the truth? Or Toranaga? About the pillowing? Are you insane?
Hujiko had said that first night.
No. Then why are you going to take the maid's place? Because of the sake? And for amusement, Hujiko-chan? And for curiosity?
She had lied, hiding the real reason. Because he excited her. She wanted him. She had never had a lover. If it was not tonight, it would never be. And it had to be the Anjin-san, and only the Anjin-san. So she had gone to him, and had been transported. And then, yesterday, when the galley arrived, Hujiko had said privately,
Would you have gone if you'd known your husband was alive? No, of course not,
she had lied.
But now you're going to tell Buntaro-sama, ne? About pillowing with the Anjin-san? Why should I do that? I thought that might be your plan.
If you tell Buntaro-sama at the right time, his rage will burst over you, and you'll be gratefully dead before he knows what he's done. No, Ujiko-san, he'll never kill me, unfortunately. He'll send me to the Eta if he has excuse enough, if he could get Lord Toranaga's approval. But he'll never kill me. Adultery with the Anshin-san? Would that be enough? Oh, yes. What would happen to your son? He would inherit my disgrace, if I am disgraced, eh? Please tell me if you ever think Buntaro-sama suspects what happened. While I'm consort, it's my duty to protect the Anshin-san. Yes, it is, Ujiko.
Mariko had thought then.
And that would give you the excuse to take open vengeance on your father's accuser that you are desperate for. But your father was a coward. So sorry, poor Ujiko. Hiromatsu was there, otherwise your father would be alive now and Buntaro dead. For Buntaro is hated far more than they ever despised your father. Even the swords you prize so much, they were never given as a battle honor. They were bought from a wounded samurai. So sorry, but I'll never be the one to tell you, even though that also is the truth.
I'm not afraid of him, Blackthorn was saying again.
I know,
she said, the pain taking her.
But please, I beg you, be afraid of him for me.
Blackthorn went for the door. Buntaro was waiting for him 100 paces away in the center of the path that led down to the village. Squat, immense, and deadly. The guard stood beside him. It was an overcast dawn. Fishing boats were already working the shoals, the sea calm. Blackthorn saw the bow loose in Buntaro's hands, and the swords and the guard swords. Buntaro was swaying slightly, and this gave him hope that the man's aim would be off, which might give him time to get close enough. There was no cover beside the path. Beyond caring, he cocked both pistols and bore down on the two men.
To hell with cover, he thought through the haze of his bloodlust,
knowing at the same time that what he was doing was insane, that he had no chance against the two samurai or the long-range bow, that he had no rights whatsoever to interfere. And then, while he was still out of pistol range, Buntaro bowed low, and so did the guard. Blackthorn stopped, sensing a trap. He looked all around, but there was no one near. As though in a dream, he saw Buntaro sink heavily onto his knees, put his bow aside, his hands flat on the ground, and bow to him as a peasant would bow to his lord. The guard did likewise. Blackthorn stared at them, dazed. When he was sure his eyes were not tricking him, he came forward slowly, pistols ready but not leveled, expecting treachery. Within easy range, he stopped. Buntaro had not moved. Custom dictated that he should kneel and return the salutation, because they were equals or near equals. But he could not understand why there should be such unbelievable deferential ceremony in a situation like this, where blood was going to flow.
Get up, you son of a bitch!
Blackthorn readied to pull both triggers. Buntaro said nothing, did nothing, but kept his head bowed, his hands flat. The back of his kimono was soaked with sweat.
Nanja?
Blackthorn deliberately used the most insulting way of asking, what is it? Wanting to bait Buntaro into getting up, into beginning, knowing that he could not shoot him like this, with his head down and almost in the dust. Then, conscious that it was rude to stand while they were kneeling, and that the Nanja was an almost intolerable and certainly unnecessary insult, Blackthorn knelt, and holding on to the pistols, put both hands on the ground, and bowed in return. He sat back on his heels.
Hi,
he asked, with forced politeness. At once Buntaro began mumbling, abjectly, apologizing. For what and exactly why, Blackthorn did not know. He could only catch a word here and another there, and sake many times, but clearly it was an apology, and a humble plea for forgiveness. Buntaro went on and on. Then he ceased and put his head down into the dust again. Blackthorn's blinding rage had vanished by now.
shigata ga nai,
he said huskily, which meant, it can't be helped, or there's nothing to be done, or what could you do, not knowing yet if the apology was merely ritual prior to attack.
Shigata ga nai. Hakiri wakaranu ga shinpai suruko to wanai.
It can't be helped. I don't understand exactly, but don't worry. Buntaro looked up and sat back.
Arigato. Arigato, Anshin-sama. Tomo gomen nasai. Shigata ga nai,
Blackthorn repeated. And now that it was clear the apology was genuine, he thanked God for giving him the miraculous opportunity to call off the duel. He knew that he had no rights, he had acted like a madman, and that the only way to resolve the crisis with Buntaro was according to rules. And that meant Toranaga.
But why the apology? He was asking himself frantically. Think. You've got to learn to think like them.
Then the solution rushed into his brain.
It must be because I'm Hatamoto, and Buntaro, the guest, disturbed the wa, the harmony of my house. By having a violent open quarrel with his wife, in my house, he insulted me. Therefore he's totally in the wrong, and he has to apologize whether he means it or not. An apology's obligatory from one samurai to another, from a guest to a host. Wait, and don't forget that by their custom, all men are allowed to get drunk, are expected to get drunk sometimes. And when drunk, they are not, within reason, responsible for their actions. Don't forget, there's no loss of face if you get stinking drunk. Remember how unconcerned Mariko and Toranaga were on the ship when I was stupefied? They were amused and not disgusted, as we'd be. And aren't you really to blame? Didn't you start the drinking bout? Wasn't it your challenge? Yes, he said aloud.
Nan desu ka, Anjin-san?
Buntaro asked, his eyes bloodshot.
Nani mo, watashi no kashitsu desu.
Nothing, it was my fault. Buntaro shook his head and said that no, it was only his fault, and he bowed and apologized again.
Sake,
Blackthorn said with finality and shrugged.
Shigata ga nai. Sake.
Buntaro bowed and thanked him again. Blackthorn returned it and got up. Buntaro followed, and the guard. Both bowed once more. Again it was returned. At length, Buntaro turned and reeled away. Blackthorn waited until he was out of arrow range, wondering if the man was as drunk as he appeared to be. Then he went back to his own house. Fujiko was on the veranda, once more within her polite, smiling shell.
What are you really thinking?
He asked himself as he greeted her and was welcomed back. Mariko's door was closed. Her maid stood beside it.
Mariko-san?
Yes, Anjin-san?
He waited, but the door stayed closed.
Are you all right?
Yes, thank you.
He heard her clear her throat, then the weak voice continued.
Ujiko has sent word to Yabu-san and to Lord Toranaga that I'm indisposed today and won't be able to interpret.
You'd better see a doctor.
Oh, thank you. But Suo will be very good. I've sent for him. I've just twisted my side. Truly, I'm all right. There's no need for you to worry.
Look, I know a little about doctoring. You're not coughing up blood, are you?
Oh, no. When I slipped, I just knocked my cheek. Really, I'm quite all right.
After a pause, he said,
Buntaro apologized.
Yes. Ujiko watched from the gate. I thank you humbly for accepting his apology. Thank you. And, Anjin-san, I'm so sorry that you were disturbed. It's unforgivable that your harmony... Please accept my apologies, too. I should never have let my mouth run away with me. It was very impolite. Please forgive me also. The quarrel was my fault. Please accept my apology.
For being beaten?
For failing to obey my husband. For failing to help him to sleep contentedly. For failing him, and my host. Also for what I said.
You're sure there's nothing I can do?
No. No, thank you, Anjin-san. It's just for today.
But Blackthorn did not see her.